Hello, thank you guys so much for clicking this video today. I really appreciate it. This is a great podcast with Sebastian from DC Spark. He is full of information. If you guys enjoyed this, make sure you like, comment down below. Let me know your thoughts and some of these opinions in here. Also subscribe, hit that notification bell. There's going to be a giveaway at the end of the video if you stay till the end. Also, make sure you guys come to Rare Bloom. Rare Bloom is the largest Cardano event ever being hosted. We've got 40 plus projects, Denver, Colorado. It's in person October 14th and 15th. There is still time to come. We have Charles Hoskinson, DC Spark, and many other great companies coming to the event. Thank you guys, and I hope you enjoy this podcast. Hello, thank you guys so much for clicking this podcast today. I've got a good one for you. I've got Sebastian from DC Spark here. You guys have heard of him before, but we're going to be going into all things Cardano, the Vasil hard fork, Milko Meta, DC Spark, the Flint wallet, what they've been working on. I've learned a lot in my time in Cardano from Sebastian. He was one of the first people ever to make YouTube videos on Cardano. So as far as, you know, my educational growth, he's been a big part of that. So I'm really excited to have you here today. Sebastian, how are you doing?
Doing great. It's always a pleasure to come talk to the community.
Yeah. So very briefly, you know, who are you? If someone's never heard of Sebastian before, you know, what has your history been, you know, in this space and also this community particularly?
Yeah, for sure. So I first got involved in Cardano almost 5 years ago now. So after the mainnet launch of Cardano, I was looking into, you know, kind of new blockchains because I was not too happy with how Ethereum was run. And Cardano was a project that was, you know, building specification first. And that really resonated with me as the proper way to build financially critical software. And so I started looking into Cardano and started making educational content about Cardano shortly after I ended up joining Emergo, which is one of the companies behind the Cardano project, where I was leading their R&D team for Cardano. And then afterwards, I ended up starting my own company called DC Spark. And the goal of DC Spark is to be a crypto ecosystem builder. So most companies work on a single product. So for example, they're a DEX company or they're an NFT marketplace company. And we wanted to try and be a full end-to-end company for blockchain. So we build Cardano itself. For example, we have CIPs who contribute code to Cardano. We also, you know, have projects like Milk Media that we're involved with, and we have projects like Flint Wallet that we're building. So we, you know, go all the way to the user side, the off-chain, layer twos, and the full kind of end-to-end spectrum of what it is to be a blockchain project.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really exciting. If you guys have ever used Milko Meta before on Cardano, you know, DC Spark was actually, you know, the ones to create that, you know, to develop it. And, you know, Milko Meta is awesome because it's the first time I ever actually got to interact with, you know, any of Bridge stable coins on Cardano. You can actually take some ADA and move it to Milko Meta and then eventually move it to ERC20. So really a huge utility added there to Cardano. And we're going to get into all of that in just a moment. But you briefly mentioned what is DC Spark, so I appreciate that. You know, before we jump into, you know, more DC Spark centered stuff, you mentioned two things recently. You know, the Vasil hard fork's coming very soon. We've got over half the SPOs upgraded now. And, you know, two of the things that you mentioned that you're most excited about are reference inputs and collateral returns. And you also mentioned that, you know, DC Spark, those ideas came from you originally. You know, what utility do those, you know, two updates add to Cardano and the Vasil hard fork?
Yeah, for sure. So when we were trying to figure out, you know, what comes next for Plutus, one of the main things that we saw was that Plutus currently in Cardano works as kind of isolated areas, right? You have the, for example, JPEG.store, and they have their own ecosystem, and there's SundaeSwap, and they have their own ecosystem. There's WingWriters, they have their own ecosystem, and MintSwap has their own ecosystem. There's not much, you know, cross products that really go across these boundaries. But what we really want with DeFi is this concept of DeFi Legos, right? Where you take, you know, exciting projects and figure out unique ways to combine them to get a whole new user experience. And so currently in Cardano, we don't have that, but we want to be able to add this. And so the way we thought would be a great way to add this is something called reference inputs. What basically allows you to do is reference the state of an existing dApp without actually interacting with it. So for example, if you wanted to write an Oracle software, you'd have like the core Oracle that, you know, updates the price feed, for example, every 30 seconds. And you have another dApp that now references the Oracle without actually using the Oracle. Like, it's not like changing the Oracle state. It's just looking at the data, reading the data from it. And that's what reference input allows. So it allows for things like Oracles. In a more complicated way, it would allow for things like permission tokens. So for example, if you wanted to have USDC on Cardano, you could have, you know, a blacklist that USDC has to maintain for legal purposes. And this blacklist, it gets updated ever so on. if you ever want to spend USDC tokens, you'd be able to reference the state of the blacklist to prove that your address is not on there. So this is kind of like the many use cases that these kinds of reference inputs allow. And it basically allows Cardano to go from these isolated, you know, ecosystems to an ecosystem where you can actually combine stuff together in unique ways. That being said, the ways you can combine stuff will be limited in Vassal because the reference inputs only allows you to reference existing state, right? You can reference the state of an Oracle how it was, you know, 10 seconds ago. You cannot compose forward, which you might want to have a system that says, okay, if this happens, then we create a transaction, which then triggers some action in the future. So you don't have forward composability. But we do have a CIP that DC Spark made a few weeks ago for hopefully the next hard fork of Cardano, which adds a concept of proxy contracts that will enable this kind of forward composability to, you know, continue to increase the composability of Cardano, because I think composability will really unlock a lot of use cases.
So, you know, with being able to reference inputs, isn't it very necessary to also, you know, be able to think forward there? I personally can't think of, like, you know, deriving a lot of utility from reference inputs without the ability to kind of look forward, because the state's constantly changing.
Yeah, so you can have, for example, smart contract that says, like, oh yeah, you can swap this token as long as this oracle says the price is like a certain, you know, ratio. So, you know, this kind of referencing the state of an oracle is a classic use case where you don't need to really look into the future, you only need to look into the past. And so it'll enable a lot of use cases, but of course there's going to be some kind of more advanced use cases that won't be allowed yet. So for example, if you want a concrete thing that won't be allowed, you know, one thing that would be cool is say, like, okay, if this price on this Oracle goes above a certain value, trigger a transaction in Milk Amida, right? So you're not just referencing the past, you're also triggering action, you know, in the future that it does not require just one transaction, it requires multiple transactions in chain, you know, maybe like three or four transactions to, you know, do whatever end-to-end pipeline you want. And so that won't be possible yet, but you'll be able to get, you know, a lot of Oracle use cases unlocked with the Vassal hard fork.
Okay, awesome. So the second thing you mentioned was collateral returns.
Yep. So if you've ever used the DEX or DApp on Cardano, you're probably familiar with collateral. So basically, Cardano smart contracts are deterministic. And this is one of the key advantages of Cardano, which is that if the transaction is going to fail, you don't have to pay any gas costs for the failed transaction. It'll just fail right away without costing you anything. And this is leveraged by this determinism of Cardano smart contracts. One of the problems of this determinism is that it is slightly possible in like a very edge case to get it to fail on chain in a way that actually ends up costing you ADA, even though the transaction failed. The benefit is that if it's going to fail, it's going to deterministically fail. So your wallet should know it's going to fail, so it should know not to submit the transaction. That's why, like, on Cardano mainnet, there's like maybe like one or two failed transactions for the entire history of the chain, despite the fact that there's millions of smart contract calls. So it's a very edge case. But to handle this edge case means that if the transaction fails on chain, somebody has to pay the miners or the block producers, the SPOs, who process that transaction, right? And the collateral is what basically enables this. It says, okay, if the transaction is going to fail, the collateral the user puts up is what is used to pay the stake pool for the work that they did. The problem with collateral currently is that the collateral can only be ADA tokens. You cannot have like any other tokens on Cardano as part of the UTXO entry. So unless it's like slightly technical. But so if you ever use like a wallet like Flint, Eternal, Nami, and you go to like the select collateral, you'll notice that your wallet may not be in the right configuration to have collateral. Your wallet might say like you don't have like the right UTXO for collateral, you need to send a transaction to yourself. And for a lot of users, this is not really an intuitive experience. Like, why do I have to send ADA to myself? And we have to explain that, oh, it's because you have too many native tokens on your wallet. And, you know, unless I go into like the full technical explanation, which I think is even too much for this podcast, it's not really clear to users why they need to do this. But collateral return will basically get rid of this requirement. So for a lot of users, they won't even need to set collateral in their wallets anymore. And they'll just be able to call DEXs, not even have to know about collateral, not set in their wallets at all, and it'll just work. And that's the main advantage.
That's very useful because I think, you know, especially for new users, you know, people like you and I, it's not a problem just to go into the wallet settings and click, you know, collateral. But, you know, for a new user that just wants to swap something or purchase an NFT, I think the collateral definitely is a barrier to entry there, although it seems small. So, yeah, definitely some great news there. Great proposal. You mentioned Flint Wallet. Let's go into the Flint Wallet. You know, there's a lot of new wallets launching on Cardano. What is Flint and why is it unique?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, DC Spark is kind of a crypto ecosystem builder company. So we do core contributions to Cardano, CIPs, all this kind of stuff. And it's if you ever try to do this, you'll know that it's very hard to improve a protocol in vacuum. Unless you're actually building something on the protocol, it's very hard to know what actually needs to be improved. What really helps is if you have a concrete product that uses the protocol. And as you're building the product, you realize, oh, actually, this needs to be improved, and this could be better, and oh, we should build an SDK for this. And that's essentially a lot of what Flint Wallet brings to the table for us as a company. A wallet is very much a product that touches every part of the ecosystem, from the core protocol itself, to dApps on the protocol, to standards for the protocol. It really touches everything. And so as we build Flint Wallet, you know, we said, oh, wouldn't it be great if we had this CIP? So we for example, propose a CIP to improve native script usage for Cardano wallets. And this is because of our experience building Flint Wallet, where we noticed some users were asking about this feature and we said, oh, well, actually, we'll need to make a change to Cardano to really enable this. And so we created CIP for this. Similarly, we have a lot of Catalyst proposals in this regard. So we, for example, build Carp, which is a indexer for Cardano that uses SQL. And for Carp, we have a whole web server for it that runs significantly faster than DBSync. And our experience is about 25 to 100 times faster than DBSync for our use case. And the way we knew why to build this, how to build this, is because we had Flint and we knew the use cases that this could now allow and exactly what kind of APIs we need to provide. So Flint really helps give us clarity. And on top of that, you know, it's great to build a natural product for users. And so Flint has maybe 30,000 users right now. So obviously as a standalone product, it also has, you know, a decent number of fans.
So you mentioned Carp, and you mentioned that you guys had a 25x increase in performance. That's very exciting. Have you guys already released that, you know, to say the web app or the mobile application?
Yeah, so Carp is currently powering the Flint browser extension and the Flint Android app and the iOS app. I think the Android app was only updated like yesterday. So unfortunately, Google takes a long time to approve updates, but it should be released. The benefit of these 25x is not just faster, significantly faster load time. So if you open Flint Wallet now, it should load your entire history in usually under a second, which is very fast compared to what it's before. But also it's a huge cost saving for us. Because when we were using the previous open source Cardano solution written by IOHK, you know, we had to have multiple servers running. And this, obviously, the more servers you have, the more it costs. And so moving to Carp was a huge cost savings. And
so you're speaking about DBSync. Did you have to have know, multiple DBSync servers open for the redundancy there because they just kind of stop working sometimes?
Yeah. And you know, DBSync has its own philosophy of how they built it, which is that they were trying to build a monolithic service. So they wanted to have, if you want to build on Cardano, just synchronize this database and you get everything. You don't have to think about, you know, what to add, what to remove. You just get everything, all batteries included. And there's a lot of use cases where that makes sense. But there's also a lot of use cases, for example, Flint Wallet, where we don't want everything. We want a very specific set of data and really optimize that specific set of data. And that's the use case Carp is built for. It allows you to manually go into the weeds, figure out exactly what you need, strip out everything else, and have a really performant backend for exactly your needs.
Awesome. Yeah, you know, the cost effectiveness of that is really important because, you know, I also use DBSync myself and, you know, it's pretty power hungry. And you have to, as you mentioned, you have to open up multiple servers, pay the expenses to the cloud for each server in case one goes down to have that redundancy so your wallet can just pull that data when users need it. So speaking more about DC Spark and specifically Fund 9, you know, what proposals in Fund 9 are the most important to you? You know, ones that maybe you have mentioned that you want to go more into or ones that you haven't?
Yeah, so a lot of our work is actually funded by Catalyst as a company. And so Carp, for example, was a Catalyst proposal that we made. And Carp has gained a lot of traction. Obviously, we've deployed it for Flint, but it has over 50 stars on GitHub. So a lot of other projects are now using it, such as NMaker, such as ErgoDex and a few other companies are using CARP at this point. And so we want to continue paying for the maintenance of CARP and continue development of CARP as more features get added to Cardano. For example, we recently added the VASP support, which, as you can imagine, requires a decent amount of work. We also have proposals for continued work on the REST SDK of Cardano. And so the REST SDK is, as you may know, is what is currently being used to power a lot of DEXs and just dApps on Cardano in general, along with a lot of wallets and tools. And the REST SDK we've built for Cardano, actually, interestingly, is primarily generated from the specification. You take the Cardano specification and you generate code from the specification to get a REST SDK to make sure it's correct. That's why a lot of people use it, because it has a very good correctness in the way it works. But actually, for this Fund 9, instead of focusing on adding more features, we're focusing a lot on improving the quality of the code generation you get from this tool. And actually, we're going to have a demo of this, of our V2 of this code generation tool, and you're going to be blown away. Like, it's going to be really awesome. But basically, what we're trying to aim for is that for dApps on Cardano, for standards like SIP25 on Cardano metadata standards, and for the core Cardano specification, you can just input into this program and it just gives you SDKs that work for Rust, WebAssembly, and JSON. And so I think this will like hugely speed up Cardano dApp development, because if you have a dApp and you need to figure out how to store data on your dApp, you no longer need to spend like weeks trying to fine tune the data structures and figure out how to get that working in your web application. It's like a huge, you know, pipeline you have to work on. From this tool, you'll now be able to take the specification of your dApp, feed it to this program, and you automatically get an SDK that works on your backend and your front end and can communicate to other applications through JSON, even show stuff to the user. So I think this will be like a huge improvement for dApp development experience on Cardano. And that's a set of proposals that I'm really excited about. We were kind of hesitant to make one proposal for this whole architecture, because the fear with Catalyst is that if you build something too abstract, it's really hard for people to conceptualize why this is important. So we instead split up this proposal into many different proposals for more concrete use cases that people might have an easier time understanding.
Yeah, and it's also important too to not make the fund size too large as well for, you know, the ranked voting. Well, thank you so much.
All this is part of trying to make Cardano more accessible. So, you know, the CARP development, the generation of SDKs is all about trying to build a really robust open source ecosystem for Cardano, where you don't have to rely on closed source paid solutions. You can bootstrap a solution yourself and make it really cheap. And we have other Catalyst proposals all kind of in that range of categories. So for example, we have like what we're calling Cardano One Box solution. So if you want to build a wallet on Cardano, you can just download this program, you launch it, and it automatically syncs CARP, it syncs the token registry, it syncs all the different services you need, Ogmios, everything. And you no longer have to spend like weeks learning about all the different services, how they work, how to deploy them on your machine. You just have one solution, you launch them, and it gives you all the endpoints you need. And so these are kind of like the solutions that we're trying to tackle to just make, you know, Cardano easy. If you want to deploy a dApp on Cardano, you get the one box, you launch it, you write your specification, you generate the SDK, and you're good to go. And that's really the experience we want.
That's awesome. You know, actually, it's a little behind the scenes right now, but I am building a dApp on Cardano, and that's what, you know, our team's been spending a lot of time on is, you know, learning Ogmios and DB Sync and, you know, learning about other alternatives that are coming out like CARP. And I could just see the utility there. You know, it just, it allows dApp developers to spend a lot more time, you know, developing and not interacting with, you know, all of these things that they need to have for their application. But yeah, great. So we covered those. What about Milkometa? You know, for someone that's never heard of Milkometa, you know, what is it?
Yeah, so the idea of Milkometa is to basically add EVM functionality to non-EVM blockchains. So as you know, the EVM is what is used for writing Solidity smart contracts. So if you write a contract in Solidity, that's a programming language, and it runs on something called the EVM. And so right now, there's a lot of Solidity developers because of the power of Ethereum and Binance Chain and Avalanche to a certain extent, all these large blockchains that use Solidity for their smart contract development. And so there's a lot of developers out there that know Solidity and don't know Plutus, which is a smart contract for platform for Cardano. And so we want to tell those users, hey, look, Cardano is a really competitive platform. We understand that you have a lot of code already written, but now you can bring this over to Cardano. And that's the basic idea of Milkometa. Now, one thing that's really interesting about Milkometa is that unlike a lot of projects, we're trying to do this by being incentive aligned with a project we're deploying to. What does that mean? So if you look at a solution like Polygon, you might have heard of, which is like a very popular blockchain. They're a sidechain for Ethereum, but they introduced their own token, right? So if you want to have access to like this faster environment, you have to now go purchase their token. This is obviously a kind of a user experience pain. And then you're kind of this other ecosystem. And we didn't like that model. Cardano's, one of the most, if not the most secure blockchain in the world at this point. It'd be a huge waste for us to like just throw that away and just build some, other kind of thing that lives beside Cardano. And so we want to really leverage Cardano, which is why we decided not to have our own token. And we have ADA as the base token, so you don't have any token you need to buy to interact with the protocol. And it's why we've been building bridges, and we're doing a lot of research into layer twos to basically leverage the security and properties of Cardano as much as we can.
Awesome. So currently, Milko Meta is a side chain on Cardano, but moving forward, you guys want to get to using Milko Meta on the layer two with ZK rollup, so you actually can use the security of the Cardano blockchain, correct?
Yeah, so basically Cardano right now, you can do sidechains on Cardano, but layer twos are not really possible on Cardano at the moment. With Vasa, it'll be somewhat possible to do layer twos. It'll not be the easiest environment, but it'll be possible. If you want to know why building layer twos on Cardano is tricky, I actually have a video about it on my personal YouTube channel called like How Cardano Handles Data, something like that, if you want to go
We
check
can
it
link
out.
that down
But
below, no
basically,
problem.
yeah, but basically the way Cardano is architectured is to maximize decentralization. Which means that Cardano wants to stay as slim as possible, so that's really cheap for anybody, even if they are using a laptop to build up a node. Which is, these properties, which are obviously very desirable, also make it hard to build proper layer twos for Cardano, and so it's a hard problem. And Vasil kind of helps unlock some of the use cases, and actually reference inputs helps a lot with layer two use cases, but it'll still be kind of difficult. But so. For Cardano, we have a sidechain, but we didn't want to just like build a sidechain and then just wait for the proposals we have in Cardano to be implemented. We wanted to, keep being active and keep, pushing the R&D forward. And so we've decided to deploy on Algorand, which, as you may know, is another blockchain that's very philosophically aligned with Cardano. They're both proof of stake protocols. They're both research development, like research-focused projects. A lot of the research papers reference each other. And so we thought this is an ecosystem with a lot of synergy with Cardano. And it's an ecosystem that also had the right functionality to support layer twos at the moment. And so we've built a layer two version of Milko Meta for Algorand. It's currently running on the Algorand testnet, and we'll hopefully have it running on the Algorand mainnet maybe sometime end of September. And so you'll also have that to look forward to. And then hopefully, as we continue bringing this technology to Algorand, we can take all the R&D we do and bring that to Cardano ecosystem as well. And hopefully that'll help cross-pollinate the two projects and also bring a lot of value to Cardano users as well.
Yeah, so with your Algorand launch, and congratulations that you guys got that running on the testnet, that's actually already a layer two application on Cardano. So, that states that Algorand already has the ability there. Does that use ZK rollups as well, or is that something that's coming in the future?
Yeah. So actually, we don't use ZK rollups. We use a kind of new kind of rollup that isn't really deployed anywhere else at the moment. And the reason why is because if you think about how to build a layer two, there's kind of two things you want. There's flexibility and safety, right? And usually what happens is that the more flexibility you have, the less safety you have. So if more concretely, a sidechain has maximum flexibility. With a sidechain, you can do a different virtual machine for smart contracts, you can do a different consensus algorithm, you can do whatever you want. So you have the full flexibility, but it's the least safe approach because it doesn't reuse the safety of Cardano and the safety of the Cardano state pools. On the other side, you have ZK rollups, which are the safest because it uses zero-knowledge cryptography, so you can prove that things are correct just using pure math, but also has the least flexibility. If you've ever looked at any of the kind of ZK rollup projects, you know that even just trying to get the simplest thing done on these protocols is extremely difficult. And not only is it extremely difficult to get working, if you have to try and like update it, this is like also like a huge effort, and there's no really a good upgrade path for these protocols. And so optimistic rollups are something that you may have also heard of that's somewhere in between. It gives you more flexibility than ZK rollup, but also less safety. But the constraint of ZK or sorry, optimistic rollups is that they have to have the same virtual machine as the base layer, which means it's not suited for our use case because we're going from EVM to Plutus, right? It's two different smart contract programming languages. So actually optimistic rollups are not viable for our specific use case. So what we've been working on is something that's in between sidechains and optimistic rollups that still leverages the security of main protocol, but allows us to switch out the virtual machine for the EVM. And so as far as I know, we're kind of like the main company looking into this, but there may be some other companies coming in and competing in the future. But that's what the Milky Way project is all about, you know, bringing different virtual machines to different ecosystems, with Cardano and Algorand being the first two.
That's very interesting. So, you know, you mentioned that because of Cardano, you're going to have to use ZK rollups because, you know, it's Plutus. Algorand, though, is Algorand EVM?
Yeah, so we're not using ZK rollups is the thing. So
we because you mentioned that you're using, and, you know, some form of, you know, ZK and optimistic, and somewhere in the middle there, you guys are exploring your own path.
So ZK rollups is over here.
Okay.
Optimistic is over here. Sidechains are here. Okay. And we're somewhere kind of in between sidechains and optimistic rollups.
Okay.
And the Algorand ecosystem also is not EVM. They use something called AVM, and their main programming language is called Teal. So they also have their own system.
Okay. Awesome. So looking at some of your Fund 8 proposals for Milko Meta, there are some really exciting ones in there for me. The first one I want to talk about is the Milko Meta dApp store.
Yep. Yeah, so one thing that we've noticed with Cardano is that it's often hard for new users to get started. And why is that? Because they don't know everything that's available in Cardano. And if they don't know everything that's available in Cardano, their first reaction is, well, there are no dApps on Cardano, because they have no place to go where they can just see a list of dApps and be like, oh, wow, look at all these things going on, right? And so we want to solve that for Cardano, and we also have the same problem for Milky Meta, right? We want people to be able to go to us and be like, wow, look at all these things that are available for Milky Meta. There's so much, you know, things that I can do. And so that's kind of the basic idea of the dApp store. And actually, we've already kind of built some of the work for that, and you can see that in Flint Wallet. Flint Wallet for mobile recently released the dApp browser, and from the dApp browser, you can connect to any dApp on Cardano from your Android and iOS device. And we're working to improve that to basically recommend dApps to you. So basically, like, if you use SundaeSwap before, it'll be like, hey, you've used SundaeSwap, would you like to use it again? And we'll have a whole bookmark system. So we're working a lot on discoverability of Cardano dApps. And of course, we want to extend this as well to discoverability of Milky Meta dApps to, you know, have an easier onboarding experience for users.
So with that, you know, let's say you're on the Flint mobile app right now and you go to the dApp store and, you know, you click SundaeSwap, for example. Does that just take you to essentially like a mobile version of their website with the Flint wallet already connected, and then you can interact with any of the applications on there?
Yeah, that's the basic idea. But unlike other variations, the Flint wallet integration does not require any code change from the dApp developer. So if you have a DEX on Cardano or a DAO platform on Cardano or an NFT marketplace on Cardano and you want to support Flint Wallet, there's no code change required to make this possible. So everything just should work as is. So it's a very smooth experience from the developer's perspective. We're going to be adding deep links very soon as well, which will mean that if you're a dApp developer and you want to have a button on your website that says like press here to open with Flint Wallet, you'll be able to have that on your website and the user just presses that, and it'll automatically open Flint Wallet connected to your dApp as well. So that'll be, you know, kind of smooth onboarding experience for dApps as well.
So moving forward, this, you know, dApp store, it's going to include both Cardano, you know, things on the layer one of Cardano, as well as Milko Meta applications. How is that from a user experience perspective? Will the user even like have to know how much ADA they have on Milko Meta versus the layer one? Like, how can they interact with these applications, you know, looking at accessibility? You know, will eventually users just not even have to know what chain they're using?
Yeah, that's the ultimate goal, right? So we have some concepts that we think will help a lot to get there. So obviously the first concept was we'll be integrating Milky Meta into Flint Wallet. And so you'll be able to have both chains on the same wallet.
Mm-hmm.
But we also want to have this concept of wrapped smart contracts, which is that you call a smart contract on Cardano, which then triggers a smart contract on Milky Meta, takes the result and brings that result back to Cardano. So from a user perspective, you don't even know you're using Milky Meta. So this will allow a lot of interoperability use cases, because there's a lot of crypto ecosystems out there that have bridges to EVM chains, but not bridges to other chains. So if you want to, for example, like do a swap on some DEX, oftentimes it's easier for this application to deploy on Milky Meetup because they already have an EVM version of their application. And then they can connect that to the Cardano chain through this wrapped smart contract concept. So from a user perspective, you interact with this Cardano smart contract. It goes to Milky Meetup, performs a swap, takes the result, brings that back to Cardano, and gives it to your Cardano wallet. And so this will be a very smooth user experience. But part of this requires actually the CIP that I mentioned earlier that adds this proxy contract support. So if you're interested in this functionality, definitely go check out the proxy contract support CIP and show your support for it. And this will also help, you know, the layer 2 version Milky Meetup on Cardano. It'll help other projects like Mamba. It'll help quite a lot of use cases on Cardano. So I think this will be an exciting new feature in a future hard fork.
Yeah, definitely exciting. The next Fund 8 proposal that was interesting to me was the Graph.
Yeah, so if people don't know, the Graph is an indexer for Ethereum. And so basically what you want to be able to do is access the state of an Ethereum dApp from some like arbitrary web server. And you might think, well, this can't be that hard. Like, how hard is it to get the state of Uniswap? Well, it's actually kind of difficult because you need to know exactly how Uniswap works, how they encode all the data for the application. You need to build some system that tracks the Ethereum state. You know, there's actually quite a large engineering effort. And what the Graph does is basically abstracts this all away to an easy API you can get. And you can just query the API and it'll give you the current Uniswap state. And the cool thing about the Graph is that anybody can write their own graph. So if you deploy some new dApp to Ethereum, you can write a graph for it, deploy it to the graph, and then everybody can now index your specific dApp and connect to it. And this is actually really useful for NFT projects. Every time you launch an NFT project on Ethereum, you can easily build an indexer for it in a few minutes, and then everybody can now track the state of your NFTs on Ethereum. It's in a sense kind of similar to CARP. So if you want, CARP is kind of like the graph for Cardano, if you will. Obviously a much smaller smaller version of it because the graph is a multi-million dollar project, whereas CARP was funded by like 50K of Cal's grants. It's obviously quite a large scope difference. Yeah, one day, maybe. But so this is useful for Milky Meetup users, right? If you have a dApp you have on Milky Meetup, you also want to be able to easily access it so people can build indexers for it. And so we want to deploy the graph onto Milky Meetup so that people can easily index the state of their dApps. This will help a lot for analytics if you want to know exactly how dApps and Milky Meetup are being used and if you want to combine this data for any other purpose.
Awesome. Are there any other, you know, Milky Meetup proposals either in Fund 8 or Fund 9 that we didn't cover in this that you would like to go over?
Yeah, we have quite a lot of proposals, as you know.
Can confirm.
I think which one might be the most interesting one. I think one of them that's really interesting is the accelerator program. So, and I think this is interesting because it's a cool use case of Catalyst. So if you ever try to look into accelerator programs in the world and how they work, usually what happens is that you get funding, some amount of funding from a company, and in exchange, you have to sell part of your equity in your company, right? And so you sell part of your equity in exchange, you get some money and then some help, and they'll help you, you know, build out your business model. What we wanted to do was, instead of receiving equity, we wanted to get money from Catalyst and then give money from Catalyst to these projects. So if somebody wants to build a dApp on Cardano, they don't have to sell any equity to us. They can keep the full ownership of their company, but still get advice from an expert company about how to basically build out their dApp. And that's what our accelerator program is all about. And so we've currently finished batch one. And so we have a few projects that released on batch one, and we're going to be starting batch two soon. And we have a Catalyst proposal for batch three. And I think this is really cool because there's very few accelerator programs in the world that can work this way. And the fact that we can do this is only enabled by the fact that we have Catalyst project.
Yeah, that's actually a very unique idea, and I didn't know that you guys weren't taking equity for those projects in your accelerator fund. And you know, there's been a lot of talk in the community recently about Catalyst and about the funding of proposals that, you know, don't actually do anything or accomplish anything. And that's kind of always been the model of Catalyst, is to fund a lot of projects, and hopefully with Pareto's principle, the 20% are going to provide, you know, a large amount of value there. However, there have been some issues there. So with this model, it's almost like you guys can, you know, take, you know, funds as a reputable project from Catalyst and then vet good projects and also give them expertise and help that they need to be successful projects one day. So that's really cool, honestly. And I wonder if that's where Catalyst will move eventually, at least partially, where, you know, you essentially have these people that, you know, vet and help projects and accelerate them instead of just all of the money going out to everyone hoping that, you know, Pareto's principle will come true there.
Yeah, I think one of the important things in Catalyst is trying to come up with new ways to make this sustainable, right? So Catalyst obviously has a finite amount of money in it, and we mm-hmm. need to stretch that money as much as possible. And obviously, Catalyst makes money from Cardano transaction fees and from the reserves, but obviously it'd be great if Catalyst was self-funded in its own right. And so I think that this accelerator program is kind of an interesting way to tackle this, right? We're taking Catalyst money to build projects for Cardano, which then end up, you know, contributing back to the treasury indirectly. But we actually have another Catalyst proposal that's to take a loan from Catalyst for DC Spark, and we'll be paying back that loan in some stablecoin, for example, USDC. And what I think is also interesting in this is that it basically allows, you know, Cardano holders to help the growth of a specific company and then get paid for, you know, helping this company grow. And so we're paying back this loan with an interest rate, which is kind of double whammy benefit for Cardano, because not only does Cardano make money from this, thanks to the interest rate, but also it helps diversify treasury holdings. So currently the Catalyst treasury is entirely denominated in ADA. And although ADA is you know, a great performer on the market and has always had a, you know, a good price action, it's never good to have hundreds of million dollars in a single asset, right? You want to diversify your asset holdings. And so by basically having this way to invest or loan out to projects, not only does Catalyst make money, but also helps diversify its portfolio away from a pure ADA basket, which I think also will help Catalyst a lot in the long term.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a very unique idea. Do you have any insights on why voting has been pushed back? You know, I think it's been pushed back to the 1st right now, and it's still not confirmed that it's happening on the 1st.
Yeah, I think there is some QA issues with the Catalyst mobile app. So I did not spend too much time researching into it. To be honest, I have quite a lot of things to do, and unfortunately, I just didn't have time. But one thing that's interesting about Catalyst voting is that they'll soon be moving away from having everything be done through this mobile app and have things be available for anybody in the community to build. And so there's actually a CIP on this that I've been helping to write. That's basically a standard for wallets in the Cardano ecosystem to add Catalyst registration to their wallets and do that as basically a dApp functionality. So anybody can build their own Catalyst registration dApp, their own Catalyst voting dApp. And I think, you know, allowing anybody in the ecosystem to build better tools will always, you know, lead to better results for the average user. And actually, I wrote the first SDK for Catalyst way back, and we have a Catalyst proposal as well for me to write the new Catalyst SDK for this kind of updated Catalyst system, if you're interested in supporting that as well.
Yeah, there's something ironic about that to me. Like, yeah, you know, I wrote the first SDK, and we've got another proposal in there to, you know, rewrite it. That's hilarious.
Yeah, well, you know, every time the protocol updates, you have to update all your libraries.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is what it is. And actually, it all kind of ties together, right? So you might remember earlier in this call, I mentioned this like library we have for taking specifications and turning them into libraries.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we're planning to use this for the new Catalyst SDK that we want to write. So you remember earlier I mentioned instead of having like one giant proposal, we're trying to have things that are more concrete where the money kind of indirectly flows into the development of this tool. And this is one of those proposals.
Awesome. So, you know, last week in Cardano, there was some tension, you know, among everyone. You had, you know, Charles come out with a tweet that was quickly deleted stating that, you know, SPOs need to quickly upgrade. And then you had a lot of SPOs like Adam Dean and Andrew Westberg come out and say, hey, it's not time to upgrade. We have a testing cycle here. Charles is incorrect. He's not, you know, in line with the engineering team here. And then Charles quickly, you know, responded, deleted that tweet within like 10 or 15 minutes, and then responded with a, you know, a requote saying, yes, this is the proper upgrade cycle that you need to follow. And then Adam Dean came out the following day and stated that, you know, there was a bug that, you know, led to the testnet being catastrophically broken. And that, you know, caused some medias to pick up because of really the word catastrophic. And, you know, looking at this from a technical standpoint, you know, testnets kind of break all the time. Like, that's pretty normal. And, you know, to me, Adam Dean saying that it, you know, was catastrophically broken, it didn't seem like a big deal to me. You know, media is going to pick up media things. And of course, it's going to matter with the short term. And, you know, there is one side too that says, well, the long term narrative is impacted because you still have people saying that, you know, Cardano is a ghost chain. You still have people, you know, talking about the issues with parallelism, you know, having two swaps in one block. And, you know, those articles were written 8 months ago or even longer now. And, you know, Ethereum people that I meet still say that. So there's a bit of, you know, long-term damage that comes from, you know, media and these articles. However, you know, you tweeted out a few days later and you stated that, you know, on Ethereum, developers can talk about bugs and they can be very open about some of the issues with Catalyst in that, you know, we have a hush-hush culture here and that, you know, we can't on Twitter go and talk about this. And, you know, Charles's response to that was, you know, there are proper forms to do this. There are proper channels for this. And then later you also responded and said that, you know, you're very passionate about Cardano. So sometimes you don't explain the way you feel in the correct way in the public image. And I really just wanted to hear your thoughts on all of that. You know, was the second tweet there, you know, a comment on the first one? And, you know, where are you standing with all of this? Do you think that we have a hush-hush culture here? And sorry for making that such a long-winded question. I wanted to also explain kind of what happened as well.
Yeah, so I can give you some background on the full thing. So actually, the new testnet that's being spun up is the fourth Cardano testnet in existence. We had the original testnet way back when. At some point, that got transitioned to a new testnet. Then we had the Jormungandr testnet, and now we have this new testnet again. So, you know, testnets roll over from time to time, and it's not only an inevitable thing. It's, you know, it's not that big of a deal. But, you know, it's important that we keep in mind that last times we went through these testnet rotations, the protocol was not decentralized yet, right? At the time that these happened, it was Cardano Foundation, Emergo, and now HK. And whenever there's an issue, we would get into meetings with, like, you know, me and Charles and other people, and we decide, you know, what's happening and what's our public message to the community about what happened, how do we want to proceed with this. And at the time, you know, we were very concerned about, you know, the exact wording of the message, you know, how to get it to the right people, to our community members and not the rest of the community. And because at the time, Cardano is not decentralized and we want to, you know, make sure the project, you know, maintain its good image as we continue to grow. Obviously, we're not in the same position anymore as a community. Now, Cardano is a very open protocol and there's people from all over the world running stake pools and building in Cardano. And there's no way for you to get everybody in one Discord channel, one Telegram channel, and get everyone in the same place. And so the messaging has to be more broad than just in the inner channels. But at the same time, you know, you also don't want to have a negative press. There's a certain balance to this. But, you know, I think the Cardano culture has grown to be fairly defensive of itself for a variety of reasons. One is that it's an extension from this time that when we were still in the Byron era and things were still kind of, you know, close-knit. And so we were careful about, you know, what goes down in what way. And some of that still remains as a culture. Some of it is because Cardano has historically not been well-treated from the, you know, mainstream, I wouldn't say mainstream, crypto media. It's not quite mainstream, but, you know, crypto yeah. media. And so there's a fairly defensive culture in the Cardano ecosystem really to whenever something bad happens, because people are concerned about, you know, what people who already have a negative bias towards the project might say. But at the same time, you know, if you look at a lot of the crypto influencers and why they have hesitance about Cardano, one of the main reasons they say is, like, I don't know anybody building on Cardano. I've never heard of any, like, development on Cardano or, like, something happening on Cardano. And I think, you know, to a certain extent, part of that is because, you know, we keep everything in these siloed boxes and in these, you know, curated groups that we maintain. Whereas if you look at projects like Solana and Ethereum, they have a very active developer culture. You may disagree with their product, the way it works, and all that. And, you know, these projects definitely have a lot of critical issues of their own, catastrophic, if you will. But despite the fact that they're hugely flawed ecosystems, they have a large builder culture. And I think, you know, part of this is because they're very open about what they're working on. You know, Raj from Solana, Vitalik from Ethereum, they actively post on Twitter saying, like, you know, I think this was a mistake, or, you know, this might be a problem. they actively ask for feedback and say like, hey, like, we think this might be an issue. Like, what are your thoughts on this? And I think this is like, you know, kind of culture that really builds an engineering culture. Because as an engineer, you want to get involved in Ethereum, for example, and you're not sure what to build. You've studied computer science and you want to get involved. You're not sure what's like the thing where you can maximize your impact for the community. And you go to crypto Twitter and there's all these Ethereum and Solana engineers talking about the problems they're trying to tackle and how they're trying to tackle it. And you read this and you're like, oh, actually, like, you know, I think maybe I can tackle this. And you go to their, you know, ecosystems and you get involved and you message people around to, you know, get a better understanding of what's happening. And through these Twitter threads, you get a lot of insight you might not otherwise get if all of this was kind of bundled up inside these security ecosystems, which you may not be willing to participate in. So I think, you know, as we are getting into a more decentralized ecosystem, we have to think about, you know, how to best curate this kind of, you know, engineering culture where we make it easy for developers to learn information and get involved, while also, you know, accepting that we have a fairly defensive culture and crypto media that's not necessarily in our favor and trying to balance around this. And this is, you know, a very hard thing to do, as you can imagine. But I think it requires some thought because, you know, I think we're not quite in the optimal configuration. Charles might disagree with that, and I accept his point of view. But I think there should be, you know, more ways to, you know, be open about, you know, what's happening on Cardano and how people can get involved. Because at the end of the day, you know, most developers are not in our curated communities. They're not on the IOHK Discord channel. They're not on our GitHub. You know, they're random people involved in the crypto Twitter, you know, ecosystem, and they're a developer and they're not sure what to build next. And if the majority of those developers are not in our camp yet, we need to reach out to them and get them interested in the problems we're trying to solve. And I think, you know, being more open about the problems we have is one way to get there.
Yeah, that's really a great point. I really agree with most of it. It is a hard problem to solve because there was value derived from Adam Dean's post. You know, while we did have some, you know, mainstream headlines saying Cardano is catastrophically broken, look what happened in the following week. Look at how many stake pool operators showed up to actually help test to, you know, ensure that Vasil was ready for everyone else. And that media that happened from Twitter and from these public platforms actually brought more testing to the chain because of that. So it's a really tricky balance of, you know, one, you know, people on Twitter that aren't developers, they don't really understand what's happening. So when they read that, they get scared and terrified. And, you know, we do need to find the right balance. And I think I do agree with you that we're a little bit too close to the hush hush. We're not all the way there. And I think somewhere in the middle where, you know, the things that you say are very well crafted, you know, to bring that help when it's necessary, to allow developers to help you as well, you know, without scaring the general public and having it picked up by media. But yeah, I think it honestly turned out as a good thing, in my opinion. And it honestly is a stepping stone for Cardano in terms of decentralization, because, you know, you mentioned, you know, these silos and, you know, how we're very defensive about Cardano. We're also very defensive about IOG. We've been very defensive about Charles in the past and CF and also Emergo. And, you know, as a content creator, I make a lot of, you know, public, you know, appearances, or, you know, I say a lot of things. And, you know, if I say things bad about, you know, IOG or Emergo or Cardano Foundation, even if it's constructive, I often get a lot of negativity and backlash when the statements that I say were crafted in a way to not be harmful and crafted in a way to be constructive. However, I still get that backlash. And I mean, if you look at, you know, the MPO versus single stake pool operator in the issue, a lot of that, you know, attacking was infighting between the community, when in reality, parameter changes were being held back and CIPs were being held back by IOG. And at that time, you know, no one could say anything negative about them. So to me, this was a step in the right direction to come to, you know, a more constructive community, and also to start that dialogue about the proper process of, you know, where do we have these channels? You know, what is said? How do we say it? How do we be constructive about this? And that's why I also really liked your tweet about, you know, a few days later, where you mentioned your passion, you know, and you know, sometimes, you know, your passion will take over. Where did that next tweet come from? You know, was it from the previous tweet about this, or was it just, you know, tweets in the past, or your overall sentiment, you know?
Yeah, well, it came from, because, you know, as I'm trying to think about, you know, what can we do next for Cardano, I often try and, you know, publicly talk about you know, what I think might be improved. So for example, you know, what I talked about for, you know, this kind of composability for the smart contracts, I've made it like a few tweets in the past kind of around this topic. And I talked about a few different approaches we could have taken for this and then why those different approaches are not going to work out. And people see like, oh, like, you know, this is not going to work out for this reason. And they see that as like, you know, me attacking Cardano in whatever way. And, you know, I can feel that over time, there's been more and more kind of tweets, you know, mentioning that, you know, I should not kind of brainstorm about these things on Twitter, which I think is, you know, the wrong approach because of what I talked about earlier, where I feel like brainstorming these ideas in public space, you know, helps encourage people to get involved and you know, join the builder community in Cardano. And, you know, I think with the kind of tweet I made the other day with like the hush culture kind of tweet, you know, I think for a lot of people, they kind of saw this as like, you know, an extension of all of this. And they don't see this in the context of, you know, our companies, you know, building Cardano, we're working on the core protocol, we're trying to, you know, figure out what are the best next steps. And they instead see this as, you know, some random guy on Twitter they don't necessarily know who's often making tweets about, you know, how different approaches on Cardano are possible. And so for a lot of people, this is kind of the last straw. And, you know, I understand that, you know, not everybody can have the full context. Not everybody's watching all these, you know, YouTube videos and following all the Twitter threads and following the GitHub, and they don't necessarily have the context for, you know, why these tweets are being made. But, you know, for DC Spark, we made an extremely active effort to be as incentive aligned with Cardano as possible, right? For Milky Meta, we don't have our own token. We use the ADA token as is. For, you know, our funding for a company, a lot of the funding comes from Catalyst, from public grants, you know, talking to people about what they need to get built. We try and be very transparent about this. We have like a DC Spark grant page where you can see the progress for everything we do. We're very active in podcasts, Twitter spaces, Twitter, all these communities to, you know, be as close to the ground as possible with people built on Cardano. We join a lot of in-person events. You know, we've tried our best to be, you know, as well aligned with the community as possible. And we have some other projects in the future as well related to gaming. And you'll see that for the gaming as well. Like, you know, we tried to make, you know, everything related to the gaming as least the money grab as possible and as much of something that, you know, sounds realistic. And in fact, a lot of the engineers at DC Spark actually get, to be honest, paid below market wage because they're aware that a lot of their funding comes from Catalyst proposals. And the Catalyst proposals we made, if you've ever looked at them, they're very low in value. Like the car proposal was like, you know, 45K or something. And if you're trying to do this in any other company, this would be like a 6-digit amount. But we, you know, all of us are passionate about what we're doing. And, you know, we're okay with doing this because we think this is like, you know, something that philosophically we're aligned with. And, you know, it's kind of sad to see that despite, you know, the fact that we've done so much effort to you know, build our company in this way, that after my last tweets, you know, a lot of people are trying to like, you know, find conspiracy theories about like, oh, this tweet is like actually a secret dig towards Charles, or like, you know, this tweet here, it must be because they have like some ulterior motive where they're profiting from the community on this. And, you know, Charles, I've been working with him for 5 years. I consider him a good friend. You know, all the stuff we've done, we're making very little profit on this. On a lot of Cal's proposals, we lose money on it or break even, and we, you know, make money off the side and ways to make up for that. And so clearly, you know, despite the fact that we did our best effort at all of this, you know, this is the reaction we got. So clearly, you know, I made a mistake. You know, I thought that, you know, from people understanding the background and where I'm coming from, that people understand, you know, all this history and context, but clearly a lot of people don't, and that's totally fine. And so I made a miscalculation, and, you know, some people may have lost respect for the Cardano community out of, you know, the way that I worded my statements. And obviously that's not our effort because, you know, I've been involved in Cardano for 5 years and our company's, you know, deeply integrated in the ecosystem, and there's nothing more that we like than, you know, Cardano as an ecosystem, you know, succeeding. And so if I, you know, make a statement that, you know, gets misinterpreted and it ends up causing harm, then this is a bad decision on my call and I have to own up to it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Cardano from the beginning, one thing that I always liked about it was, you know, how transparent it was. You know, you had AMAs from Charles, you had the Cardano Live podcast, you had you making videos about it all the time. So I think your tweet was taken as, you know, Cardano is hush hush about everything, when in reality it's not. It's been very transparent. It's been very open about a lot of things, but you were specifically speaking about development and the developer channels and bringing eyes to, you know, things that are being worked on, testing to, you know, bring the protocol to a better place. And that's kind of the issue with the internet is, you know, when non-developers, non-tech folks, not people that haven't seen that transparency in the past are going to immediately see that and then, you know, freak out. And however, I would say ignore it. You know, I've had a lot of people, you know, comment and say, you know, screw you, Big Pay, I hate you. And I'll reply to them and say, hey, man, like, you know, why would you say that? You know, what's going on? And they're immediately like, oh, I'm sorry, man. I was having a bad day. You know, my wife this. And people immediately switch up. And it's very easy for people to be angry and flamboyant on the internet when they see something like that without the full context. But oftentimes they immediately come around when they have that full context. So I wouldn't really say that you made a mistake, but I respect that, you know, you feel that you did. And also that, you know, you're going to be more careful in the future, kind of phrasing things for those that do immediately react. We've covered a lot in this podcast. There's one thing I wanted to go into before we head off of here. Your game. You guys are bringing a game to Cardano. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so we wanted to basically bring gaming to Cardano because we were looking at, you know, how can we have the maximum impact for the Cardano community? And that's really what we're all about. And we looked at, you know, what kind of projects succeed on Cardano and why they succeed on Cardano. And one thing, whether you not like it or not, that has not done as well on Cardano as people may have wanted is DeFi, right? Obviously, we have a lot of successful dApps like MintSwap and Wing Riders, and they have, you know, respectable TVLs in the hundreds, or just like around 100. And, you know, it definitely had its success in its own way. But it didn't necessarily have the growth of some of these other ecosystems that we may have wanted. And so we looked into, well, why is the case? Why is DeFi, you know, popular in Cardano, but did not see the same kind of growth we saw elsewhere? And after, you know, looking and talking to a lot of people, we noticed that a lot of DeFi ends up revolving around kind of large actors. If you look at the DeFi ecosystem on Solana, on Ethereum, the majority of the activity on these DeFi platforms and the liquidity on these DeFi platforms are not coming from retail users. They're coming from large institutional players that, you know, have, you know, double digit, triple digit millions of dollars that they're, you know, coming to play with. And, you know, Cardano, for a variety of reasons, does not really have, you know, those players involved. And, you know, Cardano, I would say, is even kind of like an anti-VC culture. And you can see that in a lot of tweets by the community where they, you know, are constantly, you know, talking about how they don't like Solana because of the VC interest. And so, you know, Cardano will definitely have a certain success in DeFi. You know, I think the fact that, you know, MintSwap has the TVL it has shows that, you know, we're definitely not in the bad spot. These projects will continue to succeed in their own right. But Cardano has definitely shifted towards, you know, retail heavy projects. So the fact that Cardano is one of the top NFT protocols in the world is usually around second place behind Ethereum. It's not by coincidence. It's because, you know, NFT usage is an extremely retail heavy application of blockchain, right? There's some institutional players that will come up and, like, you know, buy some NFT here and there as part of their portfolio. But primarily it's a retail environment. And, you know, the fact that Cardano, from a technical perspective, is extremely good for NFTs, I think it has a lot better technical capabilities for NFTs compared to Ethereum. So we had the right tech for it, combined with the fact that we had a retail heavy culture in Cardano, really made NFTs kind of like the place to be for Cardano. And so we, after talking to all these companies and, you know, looking at why things are succeeding, we decided that, okay, well, you know, obviously as a company, we've made some, you know, DeFi plays. For example, we launched this Jed testnet and we were involved in some of the development of Jed and you know, a variety of different projects. It makes more sense for us to think about how we can enable more retail heavy use cases. And that involves things like DAOs and involves things like gaming. And so we want to tackle this from our perspective, and we also want to enable other people in the community to tackle this in their own right. So we announced the hackathon for building DAO infrastructure for Cardano and Milkmeda. We announced a gaming grant for any company who wants to build gaming, you know, on Cardano. But as I mentioned, DC Spark is kind of like a end-to-end company. And we want to, you know, also be, you know, focused on, you know, building products, and we have that kind of culture. And so when we're thinking about, you know, what can we do for games, I would decide, you know, what will DC Spark do? What will Milkmeda do? What can be done by separate entities? And so we have this kind of gaming grant for people who want to come in and join. And then some of us who were original members of DC Spark have also gotten involved with, you know, building a game ourselves. And it's going to be leveraging a lot of the R&D we've done for Milkmuta. So I think it'll be a really attractive game. And notably, the game architecture will not rely on AWS or these kinds of centralized servers. And so it'll be like a purely on-chain game and not some like game that purely uses the chain to represent NFTs. And so I think it'll be like a really interesting game from a technology perspective and bring a lot of adoption to Cardano, because I think it's a very retail-heavy project, which I think is the kind of project that does the best on Cardano based off, you know, our investigations.
Awesome. That's really exciting. I'm definitely going to play that. I'll do like, you know, before I got my start making crypto videos, I used to live stream video games. So I'll have to go back to my roots there and check it out. What kind of game is it? You know, what is a user going to be doing?
Yeah, so I don't want to reveal too much about it.
Yeah, of course.
But basically, if you want to learn more, you can look up Paima Studios on Twitter, and you'll find a Twitter account that's fairly new, probably has like a single digit followers. So you might, you know, get your alpha, if you will, by following early.
Yeah, you get your alpha from staying till the end of the podcast, right?
Yeah, there you go. And it's going to be more than one game. We're going to have the first game coming up, but it's going to be, you know, more of a platform than a single game. And we're hopefully going to be encouraging other people to build on the platform. And the way the platform works is that, you know, as I mentioned, it's going to be an open platform. So there's no NFT you have to pay thousands to buy in order to play. You can just come in with a little amount of money and, you know, enjoy games, which I think is really, you know, the kind of target audience we're going for in the Cardano ecosystem.
Awesome. Well, Sebastian, I really appreciate your time today. This was a great podcast. Is there anything that you didn't cover that you want to mention before we head out of here?
No, I think if somebody followed till the end, I think they probably got a lot of really good information. So thanks everybody for staying till the end.
Yep, we appreciate you guys. If you made it till the end, comment DC Spark down below. As always, we do giveaways in the Discord channel. Join the Discord. If you did make it till the end, make sure you comment DC Spark down below. If you liked it, click the like button, subscribe, notification bell. We do these podcasts usually every week, sometimes every other week. But yeah, I hope you guys have a great rest of your day. Happy Cardano, everybody. Happy Friday. See you guys.